Welcome. Thank you for watching this teaching video from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Please check out our other videos and don't forget to like and subscribe. Our mission is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more every day. We believe this will not only help our own spiritual growth, but also help us better influence the community and the world for Christ. For more information about Oak Tree, please visit us at oaktreechurch.com. There you'll find past message series, online giving options, and more information about our discipleship process that we call The Path. Now, enjoy this message. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or the website contact form. Thank you.
Good morning, church. As you know, I'm not the face you usually tend to see up here in the mornings, but my name's Nick. I grew up here in the church, and since Daniel is going to be gone both this week and next week, he asked me to come up here and give a sermon and share about some things I've been studying for the past few years. So this started out as the elder team reaching out to me and asking if I would teach one Sunday, and then that turned into a little mini series of two. It's funny how that tends to happen when things like this occur, but anyway, so our topic for this morning is going to be the book of Habakkuk. For those of you that don't know, Habakkuk is a minor prophet in the Old Testament. It's a rather obscure book. You might be wondering, why the heck would you choose that? Because you could choose anything you wanted to teach about, and you chose this book of Habakkuk. Well, I have a little story as to why this book is meaningful to me and why I really chose to dig deep into it. So kind of the main point is I tend to see that the minor prophets get to be overlooked. And this was really exemplified a few years back when I was in college. I was a part of a campus ministry called Campus Outreach. And in this organization, a lot of the members had just become Christians in college. So they were young Christians. Many of them had never had a church background. They didn't know the Bible. They didn't really understand anything about the Old Testament or really anything about the New Testament. So naturally, they're going to spend most of their time studying the Gospels and the New Testament as a whole. It seems to be the most necessary when you're a new Christian. But I would argue that if you don't have a foundation within the Old Testament, you don't have the full understanding of what the New Testament actually means. So because of that, their Campus Outreach has a summer program that they have for their students. So it's a national organization, and every summer for each of the regions, they have a summer project. So what that really means is students have the opportunity to go to, for example, from the Indiana region, we had the opportunity to go to Orlando and live in a hotel there for a few months during the summer, and had the opportunity to get jobs at Universal Studios and work at these amusement parks. And then in the evenings, we would come back to the hotel and the organization would hold different sessions. And they were really about, now I've become a Christian, how do I grow in my faith? How do I understand more about who God is? And then how do I share that faith with others? And so through that, much of what we studied was the New Testament. And so I tended to spend my time studying the Old Testament when we weren't as a group studying the New Testament. So we had a group of us that decided that we were going to go through an Old Testament study of the minor prophets. And so we went through them in this reading plan. And when we got to the book of Habakkuk, that's what really resonated with me. I found myself identifying with Habakkuk in some ways, seeing the arguments that he was making and the questions he was asking to God. And I said, you know, I'm wondering those same things. So let's see what he has to say. And in the book, Habakkuk talks to God and God responds. They have a little dialogue back and forth. And so we'll be going through that over this weekend, next week. So a little background on the book. I've said it a few times now, but Habakkuk is a minor prophet. It's only a few pages in our Bible. It's the whole book. It's really short. There are three chapters. And so we're going to be splitting that in about in half over this week and next week. This book takes place in the late 7th century BC. We're not 100% sure. We're not given much background in this book, but through context clues and through history, we can tell that it's taking place somewhere around 612 BC, just after or just before Israel is destroyed by the Babylonians. And so we're going to jump right in here. We'll have the text here on the screen, but you can also use the Bibles in front of you under the chairs or on your tables if you want to follow along as well. So Habakkuk 1:1. The following is the message which God revealed to Habakkuk the prophet. So from this verse, we get that God is telling Habakkuk something, and we see also that Habakkuk is known as Habakkuk the prophet. So this is a title that he has. This is his job. His job, his vocation is to be a prophet. In many other books, especially in the prophets, they'll explain a little bit more about who they are, maybe give son of whoever their dad is, or whatever their job might be. But here, really, all we're given is Habakkuk is a prophet. And so then here in verse 2, here is what Habakkuk is asking to God, or what he's bringing to the Lord. How long, Lord, must I cry for help, but you do not listen? I call out to you violence, but you do not intervene. Why do you force me to witness injustice? Why do you put up with wrongdoing? Destruction and violence confront me. Conflict is present, and one must endure strife. So at this time, we can take from this that and a little bit later in the book, that Habakkuk is in Jerusalem. And around him, he's seeing corruption. He's seeing bad things happening. Now, we today might look at our government and might look at society around us and see things that we would consider much the same. Why are bad things happening, especially in Jerusalem, in God's chosen people? All these bad things are still happening. And so Habakkuk's rightly wondering, God, why are you allowing this to happen? Why does this occur? And then thankfully God's going to answer two verses down here, but just to read through verse 4 as well, Habakkuk comes to the conclusion and says, for this reason, the law lacks power and justice is never carried out. Indeed, the wicked intimidate the innocent. For this reason, justice is perverted. So Habakkuk sees that all this bad is happening. You have high up officials that are corrupt. They're not dispensing the law. They're not, they're doing corrupt things, whether it's embezzling money or whatever they might be doing. They're not good. Destruction and violence are occurring. He's seeing violence happen in society around him, and he's wondering, God, why is this happening? And he's come to the conclusion that the wicked are intimidating the innocent, and justice is perverted. So justice is, in this context, the way that he's talking about justice is when something bad's happening, a punishment needs to happen. And then when something, that's justice. I mean, in our justice system today, when someone breaks a law, justice is administered, whether it's putting someone in prison or whatever it might be. And so he's saying that's not even happening. There's no justice at all. So that can be very problematic. So we don't know here if God answers him right away or if this is something that years down the line he might hear, but we do know that God answers him directly. In verse 5, look at the nations and pay attention. You will be shocked and amazed, for I will do something in your lifetime that you will not believe, even though you are forewarned. So if we stop right there, Habakkuk hearing that from God, that sounds pretty exciting. Sounds awesome. He's going to do something amazing in our lifetime, and it's going to be awesome. And so I'm sure that Habakkuk is thinking at this point, oh, God's going to answer my prayers. He's going to administer justice. How is he going to do it? Is he going to rain down fire from the sky like he's done previously? Like, what's he going to do? This is going to be awesome. But God continues here in verse 6 and through 11 here. He talks, I'm going to read this big section here. God says, look, I'm about to empower the Babylonians, that ruthless and greedy nation. They sweep across the surface of the earth, seizing dwelling places that do not belong to them. They are frightening and terrifying. They decide for themselves what is right. Their horses are faster than leopards and more alert than wolves in the desert. Their horses gallop. Their horses come a great distance. Like a vulture, they swoop down and quickly to devour their prey. All of them intend to do violence. Every face is determined. They take prisoners as easily as one scoops up sand. They mock kings and laugh at rulers. They laugh at every fortified city. They build siege ramps and capture them. They sweep by like the wind and pass on. But the one who considers himself a god will be held guilty. So I'm sure Habakkuk didn't really like to hear that second part there. He really wanted, you know, God administer this justice, but now he's hearing that this ruthless and tyrannical nation is being raised up to come and destroy them. And that's a pretty scary thing. I mean, especially when we go through here and look at some of the things that is said about the Babylonians, about them laughing at fortified cities and just building siege ramps to capture them. Very simple for them. They've done it a million times at this point, so what's one more city for them? And so the interesting thing here is that God says that he's about to empower the Babylonians. So we know through history at this time, the Babylonians might also be called the Chaldeans in this context. They're kind of interchangeable around this time. So around 620 BC, so a few years before we would think that Habakkuk's being written, the Babylonians, which is around modern-day Iraq and Mesopotamia, the power in that area was seized by a guy, and he began to consolidate power in the area. So he started taking over the areas around Babylon and kind of assimilating them into the Babylonian culture. So the way they would do that is go in and fight anyone who wanted to fight back, but their offering was really to become part of us. Not that we're going to occupy your nation, but that you join us in kind of a coalition aspect. And so really, this coalition kind of emerged of all these different areas, and the one people group that was fighting back was Assyria. They were the only ones that actually fought back. Everyone else, there were little battles here and there, but mostly they just joined right in with the Babylonians. And so as we go into verse 12, Habakkuk's going to voice some concerns, rightfully so, with what God's told him. And he's going to ask God some questions. So we see in verse 12, Habakkuk says, "Lord, you have been active from ancient times. My sovereign God, you are immortal. Lord, you have made them your instrument of judgment. Protector, you have appointed them as your instrument of punishment. You are too just to tolerate evil. You are unable to condone wrongdoing. So why do you put up with such treacherous people? Why do you say nothing when the wicked devour those more righteous than they are?" So Habakkuk asks some questions here that we might be asking as well. We can kind of see how his argument was formulated as well. So in verse 14, we see him say, "You're too just to tolerate evil. You're unable to condone wrongdoing." So his premise that he has here is God is too just to tolerate evil. That's his first premise. Then his second premise, which he says back in 1:12, is that God has appointed the Babylonians as his instrument of judgment. So the conclusion he draws from these two premises is that is the question of why God would put up with evil happening. Since God is a good God, why does evil exist in the world? You might have heard that question. You might have been asked that question. It's a question that I've been asked a few times, and it's sometimes a little hard to answer. It's not fun to say that evil exists in the world and we have a good God. It seems as though if we have a good God, evil shouldn't exist. But God says here, gives us an explanation in this book as to one of the reasons that evil can exist in the world, and it's really God's mercy. God's allowing it to exist so that we can be eventually brought back to him, which we'll see in verse 2:4 a little further down. So wrongdoing is happening, and Habakkuk's first premise about God being just and not being able to tolerate this wrongdoing or this evil, that's where the problem is. Like I said, God's showing his mercy by allowing this evil to happen. It's not that the wrongdoing is going to go unpunished, which we see a little later down, which we'll actually get into pretty deep next week. Wrongdoing does get punished. It doesn't go unpunished. Sin has never and will never go unpunished. However, the evil still occurs. So in our life today, we experience it. may experience bad things happening to us, to those we love. And it's not a great thing. It's not a good thing. However, we know that the suffering that's going to happen will cease eventually because of our relationship with God. So moving on down to verse 14 here, it's a really interesting look as to how Habakkuk views the world and views people. So in verse 14, "You made people like fish in the sea, like animals in the sea that have no ruler. The Babylonian tyrant pulls them up with a fish hook. He hauls them in with his throw net. When he catches them in his dragnet, he is very happy. Because of his success, he offers sacrifices to his throw net and burns incense to his dragnet. For because of them, he has plenty of food and will have more than enough to eat." So here, Habakkuk's making the equivalency of people of the world being like fish of the sea. So we know schools of fish, you know, they're in groups and they kind of just wander and no one really leads them. They don't have a leader that's showing them where to go. They kind of all just move together. We don't really understand it. And that's kind of how we are as people. We group up and yeah, we appoint rulers, but we just kind of wander around. And then he's saying the Babylonian tyrants are grabbing these groups of people and bringing them in, pulling them in with the dragnet and with the throw net is two of the things he mentions here. Those can be symbols of the Babylonian military power. They were one of the strongest military powers at the time, and so they're going to be able to conquer whoever's fighting back and bring all those people in. So because of that, they're worshiping their power and burning incense to their throw net and dragnet, which is really interesting imagery here. And then in verse 17 here, finishing out chapter 1, Habakkuk says, "Will he then continue to fill and empty his throne net? Will he always destroy nations and spare none?" It seems at this time they're getting news in Jerusalem from the east of all these peoples being conquered, of Babylon destroying cities that are fighting back and taking over large groups of people and large swaths of land. So they're hearing all of these terrible things that are happening, and it seems like it's never going to come to an end. And they see kind of the storm on the horizon coming towards them of, you know, Babylon's heading towards the west, heading towards Jerusalem, heading towards Israel. They're eventually going to get here, and you know, what can we do when that happens? So he's saying, God, will this ever come to pass? Will this ever stop? Is he going to continue to do this forever? And then the start of chapter 2 here in 2:1, we really get to see more about Habakkuk and his expectations and why he's asking the questions in the way that he is. So in 2:1, Habakkuk follows that by saying, "I will stand at my watchpost. I will remain stationed on the city wall. I will keep watching so I can see what he says to me and can know how I should answer when he counters my argument." So Habakkuk is fully expecting God to answer his argument and to prove what he said wrong. So the premises and conclusions I talked about earlier, he knew that there was something wrong with it, he just didn't know what. He fully expects God to counter his argument, to answer him as to his questions, and so he can finally get a real understanding of the problems and the questions he keeps asking. He's not trying to gotcha God. He's not trying to say, "Ha, God, I'm proving that something with you isn't right because, you know, these premises and this conclusion, you know, you're tolerating this evil, and so you can't be a good God." He's not trying to do that. He knows full well who God is. He's been a prophet of God. That's his title, like we said. He knows who God is. He just doesn't understand fully as to why God can let evil exist in the world. So he's genuinely wondering how it's not unjust of God to allow this evil to exist. And he knows that God's going to answer him. He says he's going to remain stationed at his watchpost on the city wall and listening for God to answer him. He knows that God is going to answer him. He's a prophet of God, so he's able to talk to God a little differently than we are, I'm sure. And again, we don't know functionally how long it took for God to answer him or anything, but we know that he is patiently waiting for God's response. So then in 2:2, the Lord responded, "Write down this message, record it legibly on tablets, so the one who announces it may read it easily." Now, this is the first time that we hear God saying to write this down so that those who announce it may read it legibly. So this isn't just Habakkuk talking with God. This is God talking to the nation of Israel through Habakkuk at this point. And God wants it to be very clear what he's saying. He doesn't want anyone to mess it up, doesn't want any of his words to be misunderstood or misinterpreted. So he makes sure to say, write it very legibly so that everyone hears what I'm about to say. And in 2:3, for the message is a witness to what is decreed. It gives reliable testimony about how matters will turn out. Even if the message is not fulfilled right away, wait patiently, for it will certainly come to pass. It will not arrive late. God tells him to be patient here. And this, again, is not just to Habakkuk, but it's to the nation of Israel. And Habakkuk has already said that God is just and good. And so he's definitely relying and knowing that what God is saying will come to pass. He has that trust in God. We've seen that in the first book, or in the first chapter here, from Habakkuk. And then verse 2:4, this is kind of one of the most interesting verses in Habakkuk, and also is the most quoted. So 2:4 says, look, the one who desires are not upright will faint from exhaustion, but the person of integrity will live because of his faithfulness. So this verse is referenced in the New Testament a few times, twice by Paul and once by the author of Hebrews. And it's a little hard to understand. A lot of biblical scholars are interpreting this in a few different ways. It has something to do with the antecedent in the sentence as to how exactly it's translated. In the NET, it's translated, but the person of integrity will live because of his faithfulness. But then when we look at where it's referenced, it's the wording's a little different, and so we have to kind of explore what's really being said here. So if you jump to Romans 1:17, this is where Paul first references this verse. And this verse from Paul says, for the righteousness of God is revealed in the gospel from faith to faith. Just as it is written, the righteous by faith will live. Now that's the righteous by faith will live is the part where he's quoting Habakkuk here. It might be a little hard to understand for us because usually we would put the righteous will live by faith. That would be how we would say it kind of if we were talking. But it's written here, the righteous by faith will live. And so when we look at that, the righteous here can also be translated the just, or those who are just by faith will live. And so what do we know about how do we get to heaven? How are we considered justified? Justification for us today is believing in Jesus Christ, believing in he's the Son of God who came down to this earth, lived the perfect life that none of us ever could, died the death that we deserve, 3 days later was raised, and is now ascended into heaven to sit with the Father. And because of what he did, we're able to have a right relationship with him and God the Father through him. So that's our justification. That's how we would be considered just. And so another thing that's interesting is, you know, this was written 600 some odd years before Jesus was even born. So, you know, we could say that, yeah, the just or righteous by faith will live. But what about the people that lived before Jesus was born? And we've seen through that as it was previously said, all throughout the Bible in a few different places, Abraham is specifically mentioned and said Abraham believed God and it was credited him as righteousness. So we see that faith or belief is really the crux of what leads to justification or what leads to us having eternal life and having a right relationship with God. So it doesn't matter necessarily when we were born within the timeline of the world. What really matters is, at its core, is living by faith. And then verse 5 here, just ending out this section. He says, indeed, wine will betray the proud, restless man. His appetite is as big as Sheol's. Like death, he is never satisfied. He gathers all the nations. He seizes all peoples. So Sheol here, The synonym for Sheol is death. It's used to personify what death is. Not hell, but death. They're two distinct things within the Old Testament and the New Testament. So in here he's saying that the his here is referring back to the Babylonian rulers, that their appetite is as big as Sheol's. Like death, they're never satisfied. They're gathering all the nations and seizing all the peoples. And so with Habakkuk asking God, God, is he going to destroy all the nations? Is this ever going to stop? God's saying here that it's gathering all the nations and seizing all the peoples. Now, he's talking a little more generically. He's not talking exactly about the Babylonians. He's talking about the unjust, the proud and restless man in the beginning of verse 5. And so we see that God is saying to Habakkuk here that the Babylonians are coming for Israel. They're coming to destroy Israel because of all of the bad things that are being done, all of the unjust deeds that are happening, and all of the non-dispensation of justice, the sitting idly by while things are happening. Because of all of this, God is raising up the Babylonians to come and destroy Israel. And like he said in verse 3, even if the message is not fulfilled right away, wait patiently. It will certainly come to pass. It will not arrive late. So he's saying that this is going to happen, and we know before what he said to Habakkuk is this will happen within Habakkuk's lifetime. So there is a timeline that this is going to happen during, that Israel will be destroyed at this point. God has prophesied that. It's because of the people of Israel and their sin that God is going to raise up the Babylonians to destroy them. And so that's where we're going to stop within the text for today. And one of the things that I'm hoping that you guys got out of this today a little bit, and that I'm hoping to also touch on a lot next week, is when we're reading the Bible, even though we're reading the Old Testament, and it seems like, how does this really apply to us today? A lot of people might think that, you know, this was written thousands of years ago. How could it even closely apply to me today? I think there's a lot of things that we can learn. Firstly, this is written by our God who is unchanging. As Habakkuk has said, God, you are immortal. You're from ancient times. Our God has not changed since before the foundation of the world. He's the same then. He will forever be the same. So if we're able to learn about him at the time of Habakkuk, the things that we learn about him are still going to apply to us today. So that's one of the things that we can absolutely learn from a book like Habakkuk. Additionally, one of the things I want to talk about a little bit and hit on next week as well is when we're reading texts like this, a lot of times we can read through it quickly and we get to the end of the page and we have no clue what we read at the beginning of the page. We get to the end and say, oh, I read it, but did I really understand? Did I really actually meditate on what the meaning of this is? So I would hope that in going a little bit deeper into Habakkuk, a book that if we're reading through the Old Testament, we might just want to skim over and say, yeah, it's about the time that the Babylonians came and destroyed Israel, blah, 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 that we would actually read and take the time to look at what God is saying and what he might want us to get out of it today. So I'm hoping that you were able to do that a little bit this morning, and I'm hoping that next week as well you're able to do that. I'm going to close this in prayer, and then we're going to take a bit of a break, and then we'll come back in here for second hour. Hopefully you're able to stick around and we can have a discussion, can ask questions and discuss things a little bit deeper, and then hopefully you'll be able to join us again next week. So please pray with me. Father God, as Habakkuk has said, Lord, we know that you are from ancient times, God, that you are unchanging. God, I pray that as we get to know you better, as we like to say around here, that as we know you better, we love you more, God. I pray that, Lord, as we know that we're justified by your Son, by what he's done for us, by living the life that we never could, dying the death that we all deserve in our place, God, that we would also want to become more like him, want to learn more about him and more about you, God, and that we would continue on being sanctified and growing to be more like you. Father, I pray as we go out this week, Lord, that we would meditate on these words, your word as a whole, what Habakkuk has been saying, what you've been saying through him. God, I pray that we would learn more about you, God, and want to share that with others as well. I pray all of these things in your son's name. Amen.